Good morning, we are learning Shmuel Bet. We are in the middle of Perek Bet. We're on page 206 in our packet. We are going to begin with Pasuk Chet, verse 8, which is toward the bottom of page 206. We did touch upon this last week, but we're going to see it one more time. The beginning of this Perek began with David, who, after lamenting the loss of the previous king, his predecessor Shaul, he now goes to Hebron and becomes anointed as the king, at least in the area of Yehuda. In fact, we're going to continuously refer back to our map, which is on the last page of our packet. And you'll see that on this map, which is map 1, which is David and Ishbosheth, the bottom, which says Judah, there is basically in the middle of that area is Hebron. So therefore we can understand that he is acknowledged as king, at least by those individuals in Hebron and in its surrounding areas. Unfortunately, for the first 7.5 years, He was not acknowledged as king by anyone else. And that's what we will now see in Pasuk Ches. The Avner ben Ner, Sar Savasher L'Shaul. That Avner, the son of Ner, was the commander of Shaul's army. And he did something which was quite remarkable. Lokach es Ishbosheth ben Shaul. He took one of Shaul's surviving children. After all, not only Shaul died on the battlefield, but also his older children too, including Avshalom. Shaul's son, Ben Shaul, his name was Ishbosheth b'Avirehu b'Machanoyim. And this commander of Shaul's army took Ishbosheth, and he brought him across to a place called Machanoyim. It's not so clear on the first map, but if we turn to the very back of our packet, where we have map 2, if you will, in the very top right corner, you see the place called Machanoyim. Now, we'll have to understand what happened over here as to why he wanted Ishbosheth to be the king. After all, David was told by Shmuel himself and anointed by him, you will be the next king. Why on earth would he want to overstep the boundaries of such a great prophet? So we did begin seeing Rashi already, but we'll see that in a second. Let's just complete this next Pasuk test, which really goes together with the previous Pasuk, which we just saw. So let's see Pasuk test. V'yamlichehu el hagilad v'el hashuri v'el Yisrael. Now we see that Ishbosheth ben Shaul, who seems to be the next person entitled to be the king, he began to reign over these places, namely Gilad, Ashuri, and Yisrael. And then the pasuk concludes, V'al Ephraim, V'al Binyamin, V'al Yisrael Kulo. Now we're going to, at the very end, after we conclude discussing this second pasuk, it's interesting how you'll notice that the pasuk shifts from the word El to the word Al, which is no coincidence. We'll discuss the significance of that in a few moments. But before we get to that, let's jump right into this Rashi. We did see this Rashi last week, but very worthwhile seeing. The question again is, what was Avner ben Ner thinking? How could he have overstepped Shmuel? After all, David was anointed as the next king. So a very important Rashi. That the way that Avner justified his actions was through the Psukim. Rashi says, Mikra Hayadorish, that he actually learned from a Pasuk. Fabian, would you be able to just shut this door? I apologize. I try to shut it, but Mikra Hayadorish, Shasidin Shnei Malachim Lamod B'Minyamin, that Yaakov was promised, as Rashi says, by Hashem himself, that in the future you will have kings that will come forth from your last and your youngest child from Binyamin. Where do we find this? Shomu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yaakov, that Hashem said to Yaakov, Sefer Bereishis, U'malachim michalotzecha yetzeyu, that kings, plural, shall be issued from your loins. Now, Rashi points out that maybe, after all, it could be a king from another one of Yaakov's children. No. V'kvar noldu kol banav chutz mibinyamin. The time that this was promised to Yaakov was when he had all his other children that were already born, including Yosef, and the only child that was not yet born was Binyamin. So therefore, when he said, Milachim, Michalotzach yetzeyu, from your loins you will have kings, which means it will be from someone who is not yet born, which can only be Binyamin, he's the only one who was not yet born, and from him there will be Malachim, plural, kings.
Why does it have to be from someone that wasn't born yet?
Because the Pasuk says, Michalotzecha, it's from your loins, they will become king, which means, implies someone who is not yet born, but yet will eventually be born from you.
Why?
That's how Rashi interprets this verse.
Michalotzecha can be from your offspring, from your...
That were already born. I guess that could be. But Rashi feels that the more simplistic idea of what Hashem is saying is someone that who's not yet born. But I guess you're right. It probably could maybe be interpreted either way. But Rashi chooses this to imply that specifically someone who's not yet been born, which is only Binyamin, so what? So the problem is, from Binyamin we know that there was one king, Shaul. But it says Malachim, that there will be kings, plural. Now even though the truth is, it was supposed to be that the Malchus is supposed to come from Yehuda, but the reality is, for various reasons, it started off with Binyamin. So therefore, the Pasuk says, Malachim, it's supposed to be kings. We should not yet allow, thought Avner ben Ner, that David should become king right away. Because there was a prophecy that, right after Shaul, apparently, who came from Binyamin, his child, who obviously also came from Binyamin, Malachim, would end up being the kings. So therefore, Avner understood that he had no choice but to require and to push that Ish-bosheth should be the next king based on this nevuah, this seemingly this prophecy. Now, the problem was he interpreted this to mean that it must be they must go back to back. But it was possible, kind of like what you said about born before or after, that you can say Shaul was the king, then David, then maybe we'll revert back to Binyamin again. Who says that it has to be two kings back-to-back from Binyamin? That was Abner's mistake. But at least we can understand how he rationalized his actions based on Sukkim. Now, we mentioned before, this is a very strange name, Ish-bosheth, a man of embarrassment. Strange name. It's actually brought down in the English over here on page 207, in the right top column, it says that his name really was not initially Ish-bosheth. His name initially was Ish-baal. Baal is a form of idol worship, right? It's a type of an actual idol in the days of Yeravam and Achav. Achav, who really instituted the worship of Baal, which the great prophet Eliyahu on Har Carmel tried to remove, as well as others. But nonetheless, to name your child and to walk around with a name that means idol, Avodah Zarah, that they didn't want. And therefore they changed it, according to the English over here, to Ish-bosheth.
Why
implying,
did you name to begin with? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Become an American Idol? I don't know. The next American Idol? I don't know. But maybe the idol worship wasn't as prevalent, or maybe it had another meaning of some sort. Who knows?
So
it is strange.
That one was why Saul would have given his son a name, Ish-baal, with this connotation of an idol. But that's all. Leave it open.
Ah. It does. It's. Okay. It is a very valid question, which is strange why he would do such a thing. Obviously, we now see that Ish-bosheth ends up not acting in accordance of how he's supposed to, but nonetheless, his name, that was why his name was changed to Bosheth, to Busha. that there was an element of shame and disgrace to the point that his name was initially connected to idol worship. Okay, so that's just a little sidebar as to his name. Now, if we then go to the Radak points out the significance of Machanoi. The Radak over here tells us on Pasuk Ches, which is the second wide line, V'avirehu Machanoim Ratzel Hamlichu Tchila Me'Ever HaYarden, that he initially wanted to be king by the Ever HaYarden, which you can see the Jordan River going all the way up on map number 2. V'avirehu Machanoim, and he went over to Machanoim, to the Trans-Jordan, to the eastern side of the Jordan River, because this was the boundary between two of the other tribes, Bechatzi, 2.5 tribes, Shahari, Machanoim, Gvul, B'nei Gad, Ugvul, B'nei Menashe. This area, Machanoim, apparently was somewhere in between where Gad and Menashe, as we know that those were two of the three tribes, as well as Reuven, that lived, sojourned on, and lived rather, on the Transjordan, the eastern part of the Jordan. So he strategically picked this place, which to be able to have allegiance to those tribes. V'af alpi shiada Avner, even though Avner knew ki David nimshach lamelech al yedei Shmuel v'yimischazik lahamin adayin malchus shol. As we mentioned, similar in Rashi, Radak says that even though Avner knew that he was already anointed as king, nonetheless he felt that the Malchus of Sha'ol should remain, and that he should not just automatically continue, that David should not be the king at this particular point. Now, if we look now in the Mesudas David helps us out a little bit with these cities and the significance of this. And before we actually do, if you would actually look on map 1, you'll notice map 1 is a lot more helpful. Because the Pasuk Tess told us some of the places that he was a Melech El Gilad, and Gilad you can see is like on the right side, spelled out going from bottom up, Gilead. Alright, so he was a king over that area. Again, if you recall that David was now in Hebron on the bottom left of the map, he reigned over that smaller area, while Ish-Boshes was the king over Gilead. Over Ashuri, which you can see is in the top left, where it says Asher. Ashuri is another way of saying Ashur. The El Yisrael, Yisrael or Jezreel, which is right underneath Asher on our map, is another way of saying Yisachar. The Al Ephraim, the Al Binyamin.
And Gilead is what? God?
Gilead is well, yeah, that area, that probably is God, because we just saw the Radak that said that Machanoim was in between the tribes of God and the tribe of Menashe. Okay, so Gilead may in fact have some, may have a connection to God. That is possible. But otherwise it's just a pretty nice name. The Pasuk then says Ephraim and Binyamin, which you can see is really in the center of our map, which is right above that dark line which separates it from Judah, which David reigned, the Al Yisrael Kulo, and over all of Yisrael, all over Israel. So basically, wherever you see on map 1, excluding the part of Judah, in which its boundary is the Dead Sea, the Amalek, other than that, Ish-Boshes was the king. So it's a big problem. Jewish nation with two kings. One king reigning over Judah, Yehuda, and then, that was David, and Ish-Boshes over everything else. Now, the Mesudas David helps us out a little bit further over here. Mesudas David tells us, we're going to see Pasuk Tes and Pasuk Yud in the Mesudas David. We haven't seen either of them. Says the Mesudas David, going back into our packet, to the first page, to this page 206, Ratzel Lomar, what happened over here? It mentions specific cities, and then it ends off saying Al Yisrael Kulo, over everyone. If it's that he ruled over everywhere, Al Yisrael Kulo, so why you mention cities? Just say Al Yisrael Kulo, which is the end of the pasuk. So the Mesudas David beautifully explains, which not everyone agrees to, but nonetheless, Ratzel Lomar Mitchila Hamlichu Al Eilu Hamkomo Shezachar Achas L'Achas. Initially, he reigned over just the cities that we mentioned, one by one. And he slowly took over each and every city, to the point, explains the Mesudas David, Ad Shebachrona Hamlichu Al Kol Yisrael. Zulas Yehuda, that at the end he ended up becoming the king over all of Israel, excluding this area of Judah, which we see in our map. And therefore, this is the significance that he initially reigned over city by city, until finally he ended up ruling over everything. And on this, in conclusion, or at least for this pasuk, this is the reason why, as it's brought down in the Sefer Kehilos Yaakov, the change in the Lashon from El to Al. And does it make any difference in the English over here? It starts off saying over Gilad, over. It doesn't really change the language in the English. But there is a significant difference. And the Sefer Kehilos Yaakov tells us, there's two lines I'm going to share it with you outside. It says like this. The first three times this pasuk mentions the word El, and then the last three thereafterwards it mentions the word Al, and he says she'efshar, it's possible she'elu ha'gimel harishonim, that the first three that are mentioned in which it says the word El is nesvu k'achas ritzonim hamlichu, that they wanted him as the king. It started off, if there's no king, they decided, you know what, this may be good for us. Therefore, it was El. He went to them and approached them, and they willingly accepted him as king. Then, says the Kehilos Yaakov, after he already was a king over some of these cities, then it became Al, upon them, which means he forcefully ruled over these other cities. Once he gained the power over the first three, then it became Al Ephraim, the Al Binyamin, the Al Yisrael Kulo, upon everyone thereafter. That's how the Kehilos Yaakov explains this. Okay.
Does Rashi talk about that?
Anybody else? I mean, Rashi is just that one Rashi we saw, but that's no one else points out the El and the Al.
Here, Radak says.
Yes.
Al ben kom El ben kom Al. Mo El Hahari Lo.
In other words, it makes no difference. It's just the same thing. This is in this. They're interchangeable. And that's how the English plays on it, and just says they're the same. Well, if it's the same, so then why is it written the same? Doesn't, if it's the same, then it should be consistent, right? Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. And therefore, that's why the Kehilos Yaakov says that may be an interpretation. Okay. Let's just see this last Mesudas David, and then we got to move on, because we got to see more than two psukim today. Mesudas David says, Al Yisrael, Ratzel Lomar Al Kol Yisrael, that he ruled over the entire Israel, Melach Al Kulam Shtei Shanim. We're going to see in a moment that it took all this time as he slowly conquered different cities and became king. Eventually, he was the ruler of all of Israel, excluding Judah, for the period of 2 years. The Chameshes Hashanim V'Shisha Chadashim HaKodmim, and the 5.5 years before this, Lo Malach Adayin Al Kol Yisrael, he was not the king over all of Israel, Ki'im Al Mekomos Shezachu L'Malah, rather only the king, only over the places as we mentioned preceding. And that is going to answer a question that is going to be presented by the Radak. We're going to see in a few moments. Before, let's see Pasuk Yud.
So David was not the king then?
David was only the king over Judah, only the small little area. 7.5 years later, as we're going to see that specific number, the next two psukim, which I shouldn't have read that Mesudas David, I should have read the next Pasuk first. After 7.5 years, then David will become the full-fledged king for all of the Jewish people. Right now, until that point in time, there's this tension between him and Ish-Boshes, the son of Shaul. Let's go into Pasuk Yud. Ben Arboim Shana, when Ish-Boshes turned 40 years old, He became Ben Shaul. He became B'malchu al Yisrael. He became the king over all of Israel, excluding Judah. Next page. Ushtayim shanim molach. And it was for 2 years that he was the king. Ach, Beis Yehuda hayu achrei David. Even during those 2 years, Judah always remained under the influence of David. David always was the king over Judah. Even during those 2 years when Ish-bosheth had control over everything else. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayhi Mizpar hayomim asher haya David melech b'chevron al Beis Yehuda sheva shanim v'shisha chadashim. That the amount of time, the Mizpar hayomim, that David was king in Hebron, which as we see in our map, Hebron is part of Judah. Sheva shanim v'shisha chadashim. He was there for 7.5 years. Which means that he was only the king for this area for 7.5 years. And he had issues conquering and persuading the rest of Israel that he should be the king for all the Jewish people until after 7.5 years, which we're going to get to in a couple of prakim from now. But up until that point in time, he was only the king over Judah. Now the Radak asked the question, which we already know the answer to because we already mistakenly saw the Masudas David. Let's look at this Radak on page 208, Pasuk Gedal. Sheva shanim v'shisha chadashim. That David was for 7.5 years reigning only over Judah. And on this, the Radak asks, or makes a very interesting and very acute observation. He says, Nimsa malchus batela chamesh shanim. We find that there was no king for the rest of Israel for 5 years. Shar Ish-bosheth will malach el shnei shanim. We just mentioned the very first two words on this page, on 208, is that Ish-bosheth was only a king for 2 years. Now, if David was in Judah as a king and only over Judah for 7.5 years, let's just call it 7 years for fun, so that means, and Ish-bosheth was the king over everything else for 2 years, it must mean the rest of Israel had no king for 5 full years. And the Radak is like, wow, that's pretty unbelievable to have no leadership for 5 years. And on this, we're not going to read it again, but if you want, you can look inside again on 206. The Masudas David, which we saw in Pasuk Yud, said that's not really what was happening. Really, Ish-bosheth was around the entire time, all 7.5 years. But it took him time for him to actually control all of Israel, even though he was the son of Shaul, who was the previous king. Nonetheless, it took him time to be able to win over the minds and the hearts of all those people. And therefore, it took him year after year to conquer little city after city, until eventually, after 5 years of slowly persuading different parts of Israel, the last 2 years, he ended up being the king over everywhere. So when the Pasuk says that Ish-bosheth was the king, the key, if you look going back to page 206, the last two words on page 206 is Al Yisrael Shtayim Shanim Malach. That he was, for all of Israel, a king for 2 years, which implies not that he was not a king for the other 5 years, it means he wasn't king of Al Yisrael, over all the Jewish, all over Israel. And therefore, that's how the Masudas David interprets this, that really they did have a king. Certain areas at least had a king in Israel, but it took all that time until finally Ish-bosheth was able to reign over all of Israel for the last 2 years of his of this position.
Is there any talk about why it says Ben Arbim Shana? I mean, why do we care how old he was?
Well, everyone always asks how old is David at this time? How old is?
So how old was David then?
He was, I was afraid you'd ask that. 30. He was actually 30 years old. Yeah, at this exact time, he was 30 years old. He's king for 40 years.
All the different commentaries on that. Looking at the bottom, there's so many different commentaries on that
right.
Reigning, period of reigning.
Exactly. Was it the first 2 years, the last 2 years? There's a whole dispute over here, which could make matters even more confusing by going through this. But absolutely. There's certainly a lot of it's certainly up to up for interpretation. But why do we need to mention his age? It's a good question. I mean, he is a king after all. Maybe it's worthwhile knowing this information about who's going to be the leader of so many people. It may also have something to do with just thinking that why wasn't he on the battlefield, right? So there are some commentators that said that his other brothers died, right? Who was Ishbosheth? He didn't even fight with his father in this huge war where Shaul died and his three sons. And some of Farshim say because he was too young to fight. So that's brought down. So that, what do you mean he's too young to fight? He's 40 years old. So others interpret the significance of Ishbosheth is that what was the busha? The busha is that he was physically unable to fight. There was something wrong with him physically. He had flat feet, a face, whatever it was. He could not fight. And therefore, that's the reason why the Badavka gave him this name, Ishbosheth. It's a guy of embarrassment. And that would explain, if he's 40 years old, what do you mean he's too young? He's too young to fight? What are you talking about? Why is he too young to fight? He's too old to fight. Maybe he's too old to fight. Well, his father was on the battlefield fighting. He happened to be the king. So that may also play into it as well. Okay, let's move on. Let's see Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayetze Avner ben Ner v'avde Ishbosheth ben Shaul mimachanoyim Givona. So Avner ben Ner went out, as well as the servants of Ishbosheth, who, again, he always mentions that he's ben Shaul, as though to say he deserves to be the next king. They went mimachanoyim Givona. So they went from Machanoim, which we already saw on our map, it was on the top right, to a place called Givona. And if we look on map 2, maybe it's on map 1 as well, map 2 clearly has this, that Machanoim was on the top right, and he went to Givona, or Gibeon, right, if you will, which is in the middle, toward the left a little bit. So we're now going to see that there is going to be, and this kind of gives away a little information, the battle between Avner and Yoav are going to happen right there in this place called Gibeon, or in Hebrew, Givona. So he went there. The Yoav Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Yoav Ben Sruya, the Avdi David Yotsu. It wasn't just Avner, who was on the side of Ishbosheth, that went to Givona, but also Yoav, who was the son of Tsruya. If we recall that Tsruya was actually David's sister, that Yoav ben Tsruya obviously is very close to David. The Avdi David, Yotsu, they also went out. V'yifkashum, and they, V'yifkashum, instead of Sion translates, B'hagu Elu V'elu, they encountered one another. Al-Berechas, Givon Yachtov. Berechas, translated by the Masudah Sion, is Hu Makom Haboni Ba'abonim Batzid. It's a place where there was little stones and rocks and plaster around, like a little wall. Misham Miskasim Amayim. And inside that little stone area, those stone walls, was a body of water, which is translated, Berechas is a pool of water. Berechas, Givon Yachtov. The Yeshu Ela al Habrecha, Mizev Ela Habrecha Mizev. So each of these little armies gathered together in this city, in this area, by this pool. One was al Habrecha Mizev, one was on one side, and the other one was al Habrecha Mizev, one was on the other side. Now, based on just the simple words, it sounds very clear what's the significance of why these two people are coming together. They're probably not coming, right, they're coming to fight. They're not coming to go to Starbucks and have a cup of coffee. They're coming to kill each other. And that, in fact, if we look at the Radak, is precisely how he interprets it. But not everyone does. The Radak over here tells us on Pasuk Yud Bet, it's the first wide line, the middle of the first wide line, the Radak, it says, V'yeta Avner im Avni Ishbosheth, that Avner went together with the servants, the soldiers, let's call them, Ishbosheth, Lelechas L'Givon, they went to Givon, to Eretz Binyamin, which is in the area of Binyamin, which of course is where Ishbosheth is from. V'yatsu aleihem Yoav v'avdi David v'yipkishum abrechas Givon. So if you look on the map, you see that really they have no business being there, because this map shows clearly that Judah, which is the only area in which David's army had any business being in, if you look on map 1, you'll see a clear line, and then above it, north of it, is Binyamin, and then, as we'd have to go back to map 2, you see eventually you get to Gibeon. So the point is that the fact that they went north to this particular city, knowing that Ishbosheth's army and leadership were there, it was probably a pretty clear indication that they wanted to fight them. That this was the motivation of David's true motivation of Yoav and Suria was to fight. And continues the Radak, now on the third wide line, Venera, it appears, Kidas Yoav Hayel Hilochanima. Why else would Yoav be going up with his army but to fight against the likes of Ishbosheth? But what did he do? He went there and he saw that the army was huge. He saw that he was greatly outnumbered. The Chadal, and therefore he refrained from fighting them because he knew you have to choose your battles and he was going to lose it. Ad until Sha'amar Avner Yakumu Nahanarim Bisachku Lifanei, which we're going to leave off not translating that, which is going to be a pasuk we'll see later on. But Avner is going to say something which will somehow entice Yoav to want to wage war of some sort. We're going to see exactly what he said in a moment. But again, according to the simple explanation, is what the Radak seems to be, is that in fact their motivation was for war. Now it's interesting, it's brought down over here in the Mishpatzot Zahav that not everyone agrees to this. In fact, according to the Malbim, he picks up on one of the words over here. Specifically, the following statement, but when it says Vayeshvu, when it says that they dwelled, that they were sitting, actually it is in Pasuk Yud Gimel, in the middle of Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, V'yeshvu eila al b'reichem yizeh, v'eila al b'reichem yizeh, that they were dwelling or sitting. What's the significance of the word V'yeshvu? So the Malbim, interestingly, says the word V'yeshvu comes from the famous expression, to be sheves achim gam yachdav, which means we're sitting as buddies, brothers, friends. And therefore the Malbim says that their real motivation, which is kind of hard to understand, the Radak seems to be more palatable, to more realistic, but according to the Malbim, they really came to some form of a treaty, some type of a pact between the two to hopefully not fight.
Givon was that in Yehuda, or was that in...
It was in Binyamin. In fact, the
puzzle. It's like right on the border, so to speak. It's like right in the middle, right on the border, probably.
It is close.
So maybe there's a question there of whose property is that? Maybe they were, wanting who's going to take over that area, because that's close to Yerushalayim too.
Right.
It's right north of Yerushalayim.
Correct. It's a. In other words, it's a strategic
spot.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to find the pasuk which clearly said that it was in the place of Binyamin, which I think I thought we had. Okay. Maybe not. All right. But it was certainly, as we look on at least map 1, you see clearly it's not part of Judah. It's north, significantly north of it. Okay, you can, alright, but yeah, it is pretty, very close. Alright, let's move on. Let's see the next pasuk. We're up to Pasuk Yedal. Pasuk Yedal tells us, V'yomer Avner el Yoav, Yakumno Hanorim. So Avner, who was on the side of Ishbosheth, said to Yoav, who was on the side of David, he said, Yakumna, please get up the Norim, these nice young Jewish soldiers, and v'yisachaku lefaneinu, let them play in front of us. Let them have fun in front of us. The Yomer Yoav.
Strange word.
It's a very strange word. We're going to focus on that word in a second. Yomer Yoav Yakumu. And he said, okay, let us rise. And it's translated over here. Let us duel, right? Let them duel before us. Now, duel could sound like they're actually fighting. But the reason why they choose the word duel is because the initial feeling of Avner was not for them to fight. It was, he, according to the Miam Loes, he had no intention for them to actually fight a war. It was actually just a game, some type of a sport. And let them come and let them amuse us. And right, so let's look in the Radak over here. So the Radak says on Pasuk Yadalid, Derech Schok. Schok is what? Jest? What was it?
Playing.
Yisgaru, Elal, let them play and jest with one another, Bicharboseyan, with their swords. Venira, then we'll see Miyada Medarche Hamelchama Yoser. Who knows the ways of war better? Let's see who can is a better sword fighter. Right. Vidarshu Razal and our Rabbeinu Zichron Levracha, blessed memory, state. Lafish Asa Imdam Hanarim Schok. We're going to see later on, you can see the Radak tells us it's going to be toward the end of Perek Gimel, next Perek, that he dies.
Who dies?
Avner dies. And the reason why he dies is because of the statement that he said, let them play around with swords and let them maybe cut each other up and we'll watch, it'll be a lot of fun. Like the Roman Colosseums, we'll throw some guy into a lion, a gladiator, let them get torn apart, and we'll all clap, we'll put my thumb up, thumb down, kill them, not kill them. That's a lot of fun. It's great entertainment. So since you do not care and you're not considerate over the lives of a Jew, Mida Kenegan Mida, the appropriate quid pro quo would be that Avner also will die in that fashion. You're also going to be killed, Becheret, with a sword, as Radak will is promising, is what we'll end up seeing soon in the next parak. But why did he die? Because if you consider the blood of another human being so insignificant, then we'll consider your life so insignificant, we're going to kill you just the same. And this, in fact, is very similar to what Mesudas David says. So let's briefly look upon it. Mesudas David says also, Pasuk Yudalid, Ratzalomar, Yisgar Melchama Elab Ela, let them engage in this playful war between one another, war games. Der Schok, Liros Mihem Yoser Melumen Melchama, to see who is more talented in fighting over the other. Now, we're going to see why did he really care. So we're going to see that this is a tremendous significance found in this next Pasuk in Pasuk Tesvav. Pasuk Tesvav tells us, V'yakumu v'yavru b'mispar. So as these two great leaders agreed to be engaged in this sport, and initially it was only for entertainment purposes, they got up according to number. Shneim aser l'binyamin u'ishboshes ben shal u'shneim aser me'avdei David. That there was 12 on one side, representing Ishbosheth, and 12 representing Avdei David. Well, it's interesting that it's fair. If you want to have a fair fight or a fair play fight, it has to be even numbers, right? You can't have, it's like in hockey, of a power play. When you have one person that's off the ice, the other team is going to be a huge advantage. So it makes sense that you should have the same amount of numbers. So the Shiloh is, why is this sport 12? If it would be some, maybe it makes more sense to be like baseball, it should be 9. Football, 11. What's 12? Exactly, the Shvatim.
Yeah, but why and, does it say, Levin Yom and Ula Ishbosheth? What is the name Levin Yom here?
So the Mefarshim, explained that even though you would maybe think it would be equally distributed, he took all of these 12 soldiers from from Binyamin specifically. But there's really a greater significance as to why it's Binyamin, because he comes from Binyamin. And what he was trying to indicate was that, why is it 12 against 12? He said, because it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong that Ishbosheth is a king over some Jews, and David is a king over some. Let us determine which king will rule over all 12 tribes. And therefore he said, you have your 12 and our 12, and the two of the 12 will fight. They're not going to really kill each other. We're not going to allow them to kill each other. They'll joust with one another, and if they tap in, they hit the guy, that means a point goes to you, and a point goes to you. That's all that's going to happen. And whoever would win this little game, then the victor will end up, their king will rule over all the Jewish people. It's absolutely wrong that we should have all, it should be all split up. And therefore, again, that's the significance why he keeps mentioning Ishbosheth ben Shaul. You know he's already the son of Shaul, but he's saying he needs to be the ruler of all 12, or let David be the ruler of all 12.
Who's saying that, though?
This is with Avner and Yoav. They decided that it should be 12 and 12. They agreed on that particular number, which is bizarre, that specific number, but that's what it represents.
But that just changes the interpretation before that Avner will be punished because he thought it was okay to spill blood.
Because Avner initially is the one who initiated this concept. He's the one who said, let's do it. And
I know, but the question is, was it to kill, or was it just to evaluate situations, you know?
Well, it could be, they didn't want to kill, they did not want to kill. But they thought this is a way that we can determine whoever is the better, they'll end up being this. Okay.
That's right.
Exactly. That's the idea. We're going to see two more psukim. We'll stop. We started very late. If you need to leave, I it's okay. Pasuk Tet Zayin. The Pasuk says, that's where we're up to. Pasuk Tet Zayin. V'yachaziku ish v'rosh ri'ehu v'charbo v'tzad ri'ehu v'yipul yachtov. Unfortunately, this little game got out of hand, and what started off as playful ended off as a war. And each person's head was upon the other. The charba b'tzareihu, there was a sword on the side of their friend. V'yipul yachtov, and they fell toward one another, which they stabbed one another, and they both died, or all 24 people died. V'yirku amakamahu chelkas asurim asher begivon. They called the name of this place Chelkas Asurim, explains the Masudas Sion, representing the sharpened point of the sword, which was in Givo. That's what they called the place. But there was a tremendous significance behind this. The significance was, and Radak again explains, V'yipul Yachtav, Kol Echad Hargis Chaver, everyone died. Because the initial reason was to see who should be the king, over this 12 or this 12. And the answer was, No answer, right? They all died, as though to give the message, this was not enough of a sign. But this is something which we often find. We find this also when it comes, let's say, I'm going to say in Europe, when it comes to soccer, right? Or they call football. They're just playing, they're just having fun, playing. You get into the stands, maybe a little alcohol may help, and there are deaths. There's actual wars going on because of games. Let's see one more pasuk. Because of this little thing, it blew completely out of proportion, and it became a huge, huge battle, a huge war. The Nagef Avner ve'Anshei Yisrael lifnei Avdei David. And Avner ben Ner smote the people lifnei Avdei David. So therefore we see that Avner was losing this war, and the powerful army of David, led by Yoab and Suria, remained. But in conclusion, this teaches us a very, very important message. The message of, as two messages. First of all, the Masudas David, Batihi Amulchama Kasha, on Pasuk Yitzayin, Im ki metchil okamu masim mispar leilochem derascho. You start off as a joke, a little slap fight. All of a sudden, it can blow out of proportion. And that leads to the second issue, that sometimes when it comes to a huge, huge dispute between two parties, you stop for a second and you ask, how did this start? I don't even remember. I don't even remember what we were fighting about initially. But it just blows out of proportion. And therefore, the importance of not allowing it to begin. Because once you start, sometimes, as we see here, and we're going to continue to see this civil war, it may not end so fast. We'll stop here.